Welcome to the Points Hoarder Podcast. Sit back, relax, and enjoy this edition.
Hello, and welcome to the Points Hoarder Podcast. This is episode 44 on Thursday, February 6th, and this is Seth sitting in for Steven as our host tonight. We've got Rollo on the call with us. How you doing, Rollo?
Hey, how's it going, Seth?
Very well, very well. Both Foz and Steven are apparently working today, so it's up to us to share the excitement and news. You up for the challenge?
I think we can handle it. We'll see. You know, the show might get a little out of hand, but anyone to keep us in line like Steven does.
That's right. That's right. We do use him for that. So first off, before we actually get to the news of what's happened in the travel world, I want to touch on my jealousy of you, because you apparently been hobnobbing all weekend with Super Bowl parties and famous people.
yes. That is, well... Let's see, you know, since we can't say Super Bowl, we got to call it big game because we don't have the licensing, which is ridiculous, by the way.
I thought the news was allowed to refer to it as its proper name, and I consider us a news source.
That's right. I think we will not get in trouble.
Sweet, in jail for yet another month.
But I will say that the day before the big game or Super Bowl, I was at 7-Eleven, and they had six guys in suits checking in 7-Eleven the banners and their displays to make sure that everything was up to par. This was about a mile from the stadium, so I don't know. They didn't have anything better to do than do that.
Wow.
It's pretty funny, though. There's a bagel store in Rutherford that had to cut out the word Super Bowl from this little, like, pricing card they had. And they had about 100 cards there, and they all had a little cutout. So I'll try to get a picture posted.
Nice. that's awesome. It's funny to me that, like, a mile away from the stadium, they were so concerned about that sort of thing, considering everybody going to the game was coming from much further away.
Exactly.
You couldn't walk to the game. It was hard to drive to the game. You basically were coming, like, from somewhere else in Jersey, reasonably far away, or Manhattan to go, so.
Well, you couldn't even take the train, as New Jersey Transit.
They tried, sort of.
They had a stat. It said 27,000 people attempted to ride the train. The previous record was U2, 22,000.
And I thought the number was even higher than 27, so.
Oh, okay.
But either way, and like they planned for far fewer than that because they're idiots. But.
well, let's talk about my party scene. So.
Seriously.
Enough of that. So Friday night, I went to the Maxim party. It was at a space. It's called a Space NYC or something like that.
Okay.
They basically created a club in a heated tent environment. It was sponsored by Patron Tequila, I believe.
Nice.
And it was pretty good. They had a electronic music DJ, the guy from Swedish House Mafia.
Okay.
He didn't show up because he was sick or something, so they had to get a fill-in guy. But the party was still pretty good.
Can you blame it on like his flight getting canceled for the snow or something, or is that not Friday?
I think we can, but people won't remember what day it was. So yeah, his private jet got canceled.
Oops.
Which leads me to the highlight of the party, speaking about private jets. At about 1:30 a.m., Mr. Justin Bieber showed up and basically caused a major scene because people were taking pictures of him and his bodyguards did not want anybody taking pictures. So he was standing there posing on top of a couch, and people were getting thrown to the ground telling them no pictures, no pictures. Phones were being tossed. It was very interesting.
Sort of like you'd sort of think like if they didn't want that happening, they'd just get him down because that's like not going to stop.
Well, that's exactly what some guy next to me said. He goes, if you don't want your pictures taken, just get off the couch. Everybody's going to take your picture, obviously.
Yeah. Oops.
Yeah, it was. But the party was good. I mean, there was a lot of people. It's fully promoted as far as, you know, they fill it up with model looking girls. So it was a good party.
Nice. Well, I'm definitely jealous. Although, you know, getting assaulted by bodyguards, taking pictures of Justin Bieber, not so fun. then again, I probably wouldn't take pictures of Justin Bieber. So I suppose I'm in the clear on that one.
I did take a picture and I was able to get him and I tweeted it and it was getting retweets from all these Bieber fans. So it was pretty funny.
Nice. So your clout has gone up on Twitter now?
Well, I guess in my expertise of Justin Bieber /TMZ, maybe, yes.
Yeah, okay. I'm using clout in the branded sense with a K for, like, the company that, you know, ranks how popular you are on Twitter, not any particularly useful metric.
Yeah.
I mean, they think I'm popular enough that I just got an offer for a $5 coupon from McDonald's.
Oh, will you be getting a Mac Cafe of McDonald's?
No, it's apparently so I'm supposed to try their Chicken McNuggets and new habanero sauce while enjoying the Olympics. I will not be bothering to sign up and claim said prize, in case you're curious.
You'll just go to McDonald's if you feel like it and just buy one.
I'm pretty sure I'm not even going to do that. It's a pretty safe bet that I won't be there.
Oh, well, that's funny.
Anyway.
Well,
quickly. More travel-related, perhaps. Although the McCafe I'd have to travel for, right? They don't have many of those in the U.S. United had some fun over the weekend. Not surprisingly, some news leaked out and pissed off a whole bunch of people in that they decided that Cleveland is no longer a hub. So they're cutting from about 195 or 199 flights a day down to 72 as of this summer. It'll be interesting to see, what the net impact of that is going forward.
I think, we kind of knew this was going to happen. They just delayed it. I mean, initially when the merger went through, that's what everybody questioned is what's going to happen to Cleveland. And you could kind of read between the lines, even though they said we're keeping Cleveland, that they just have too many hubs and that would be the first one to go. That's what I think.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's not surprising that this happened. I think it's a little weird that, there were so many comments about, Cleveland is growing stronger than some of our other hubs and we're going to have our annual meeting here and this and that. And then one day, oops, you've been losing tens of millions of dollars for a decade. Right. Yeah. So that goes back to the Continental days. That's not even post-merger that Cleveland's been a problem. So it makes me wonder. I mean, obviously, you signed the letter with the Ohio AG to allow the merger to move forward. But why did you expect that it was going to stick around? So I don't know. That part of it is interesting to me. I'm not at all surprised that they're cutting it. It'll be interesting. They're keeping basically all the mainline flights and just cutting United Express.
Oh, so they'll still have, flight like longer to what? What do they fly to the West Coast from Cleveland? Yeah, right. Vegas, yeah. Maybe LA.
They definitely have Vegas. They do even seasonally. They've done San Diego and Portland and Seattle. So they have Phoenix. So they've got some longer flights. They do a couple Caribbeans and Cancun and that sort of thing for the vacation crowds. Lots to Florida for vacations, and then they still go Boston, D.C. and New York, both LaGuardia and Newark.
Right, so, right.
And the hubs, other hubs as well: Chicago, Dallas, Houston.
So. Yeah, I think I read an article today about, I think it might have been from a Pittsburgh paper where they're saying that the dehubbing of Cleveland might benefit Pittsburgh in some way. I guess the airport there would get some more traffic.
Yeah, they're not too far a drive apart. It's also possible, I suppose, that right now the EAS routes, the Essential Air Service routes that were being operated as United Express are mostly migrating to Chicago. But I wonder if Pittsburgh thinks they might be able to have someone bid them out of Pittsburgh instead. I did read something interesting randomly in all the other write-ups about this. People talking about how Cleveland's made all these recent strong investments. And one of them was they just opened this new convention center about a year ago. And the guy who was brought in to open that convention center is the same guy who opened the Pittsburgh Convention Center 2 years before U.S. Airways left them. And so I got to be wondering, does he think he's ever going to get a job building a new convention center in a mid-sized city again? Because anyone who's paid attention to this and looks at the history has got to be like, oh, well, if he builds it, then 2 years later, our airport will shut down.
That would be funny.
That would be a little awkward.
What would be the next city that could be a casualty like this?
Oh, Charlotte.
Charlotte.
Upgrade their convention center. It's just the right timing now with American and U.S. Airways. I actually don't think Charlotte's going to get de-hubbed. Phoenix, maybe?
Phoenix, yeah.
Phoenix is more likely to get de-hubbed than Charlotte, I think.
Detroit?
No way. That's a super strong market for Delta, even with all the other economic issues they've got.
Minneapolis?
More likely to go to than Detroit, I think.
Yeah.
So, anyway.
Interesting.
Did you ever connect through there?
Detroit or where?
No, Cleveland.
Once, actually, just – it was a random – I was going to Chicago, and I think it was in the old pre-merger days, so I did West Coast, Cleveland to Chicago. So that was the connection. It was like a red eye, one of those short red eyes.
Yeah, the mid-con red eye, Hal.
Yep.
Yeah, I think my last flight through there was also a red eye. It was the Phoenix to Cleveland flight that was the last Continental flight.
Oh, yeah, I remember. I remember
a couple years ago, right before the PSS integration, it was the last departure with a CO code on the flight number.
That's right. I remember you had chocolates and stuff with the crew.
Yeah, we had a good time on that flight. There was a bunch of us. So it was, and I called shenanigans. I got upgraded even though I shouldn't have been.
That's great.
Yeah. So anyway, I've got some fond memories of Cleveland. I think it's a nice airport. Sucks that they're losing all this service, but like you said, I don't think anybody is surprised or shouldn't be surprised. So
we should have had a guest call in, our friend Brad.
He's in town too. I could have had him. Oops. Oh well.
Sports. We'll blame it on the big game and the snowstorm.
Yeah, that's right. He's pretty pissed about that, I will say. Not surprisingly. Next up, Southwest Airlines announced their new route map out of Dallas, out of Love Field. They're getting ready for the Wright Amendment to be repealed and finally planning long-haul flights. And so they've announced the 15 new destinations they're going to serve, and it's none of them are surprising, I think, is the answer. It's, you know, they're going to LaGuardia, they're going to DCA, they're going to Baltimore, they're going to Chicago, they're going to Las Vegas, they're going to LA, Phoenix, Orange County, Miami, Tampa, not Miami, I'm sorry, Fort Lauderdale, Tampa, Orlando. I'm sure I'm missing a couple.
Atlanta? Did you say Atlanta?
I did not say Atlanta. Atlanta's on the list, yep.
Okay.
Nashville, maybe?
Baltimore, I believe.
Yeah, I got PWI in there. Anyway, I did that list for memory. We'll have a link, obviously, in the show notes with the full map. It's a whole bunch of flights. You know, it's a whole bunch more destinations. The interesting thing is, in an interview related and sort of surrounding the announcement, they had the CEO was talking. They're not increasing the number of flights they have very much. They had about 145-ish flights average on a peak weekday right now, and they only can really go up to about, I think, 160. So, or they're going up to 147-ish, and 160 is like the max they can do with 16 gates, something like that. So, there's not a whole lot of growth in the number of flights, which means some of the other markets are going to see frequency cuts. So this is one of those, you know, it's not technically slot limited, but it is gate limited. They can only have 20 gates at Love Field as part of repealing the Wright Amendment. And so it's going to be an interesting challenge to see who gets more flights and how those things balance.
Yeah, I think, did they benefit, I think, from the American Reagan stuff? I think, is that what allowed them to fly into Washington?
They did pick up a whole bunch of slots from Reagan, and they got a whole bunch of LaGuardia slots also. Huh. They got, I want to say, 27 pairs at Reagan, which is huge. JetBlue was next at 12, and there's five that I haven't accounted for that I'm guessing went to Virgin Atlantic, or excuse me, Virgin America, but I'm not sure.
Yeah.
They never announced it. So, yeah, it's a very the 27 pairs at DCA are going to be huge for them. But, and obviously some of those are going to go down to Houston now, or to Dallas now, but we don't know where they're all going to go yet. They haven't made that announcement.
Right.
But it's interesting. They've announced all those flights. Delta wants to get a couple gates, and they had previously announced something like 20 or 22 different daily flights to all their hubs that they wanted to bring in. So, I don't know. It's going to be fun to watch what happens down there. I sort of didn't realize Southwest has the lease on 16 of the 20 gates.
Oh, really? My question was, I was going to ask you if you've ever been there.
I have not, actually. I never have. I've only been to Dallas, I think, even once or twice. Maybe once for real and otherwise just connecting through.
Yeah.
So I connected through it back when it was a Delta hub. Does that count?
It counts.
DFW?
Well, I mean, if you remember what it looks like, it counts.
Sure. Yeah, I remember really long moving walkways between the terminals, but that was easily 30 years ago. So,
well, now they have the SkyTrain at Dallas Fort Worth. We're talking.
Yeah,
about.
I'm talking DFW. Yeah.
Yeah. They have a train that connects the terminals.
Oh, that's nice. I'll have to go visit.
Yes, it's actually not bad.
See if I can break the train. Awesome. What's next? New award charts. United finally got their new award charts implemented. They were supposed to go live this past weekend. They ended up going live, I guess, what, this morning? Tuesday morning?
No, Monday morning.
Well, it was supposed to be Monday also, but then the whole website was down Monday.
So it got pushed back a second time from the February 1st deadline?
It got pushed from February 1st to February 3rd, and then technically it went live on February 3rd, but the website was basically you couldn't book any awards.
Right, yes.
At all. So it finally actually sort of started working midnight on the 4th. I think, you know, the nice thing is they actually came back a little more generous than they'd originally announced in a couple ways. So one was the idea of connecting flights on a partner. When it was originally announced, the rule was if you fly long haul on United and then connect to a partner carrier for the sort of last hop, you had to be in a lower class of service to get the United rate. And now the rule is you can stay comparable class of service even on the short flight.
So it makes more sense. I mean,
right. You don't have to voluntarily downgrade yourself because you're trying to keep the United, you know, the cheaper award rate for that, you know, intra-region flight. And the way they're defining it is basically by award regions. So if you're flying to Europe, you have to fly United for the transatlantic hop. But once you get to Europe, you can fly any of the like 8 or 10 different Star Alliance partners all as part of the same award. So even if you go across in business class, you can fly Eurobiz for the rest of your segments at the same price.
Right. Which makes sense. I mean, it probably was so much more difficult to implement the other way around that they just said, you know what, we're just going to do it this way.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think that this is it's generous and it's nice of them, but it's also way smarter and easier to implement on the systems. Like, can you imagine what the award charts would look like online if it's like, okay, this flight in coach and this flight in business, and like trying to mix and match those on a single search? I mean, multi-city, you can sort of do it, but God, what a mess.
They would have to change the screens because of the way that it's set up. I mean, you get those mixed carrier messages, and like, it would be a nightmare, I think.
Yeah. So that's good news, I think, relatively in our favor. Sort of a side effect of that, though, is, you know, we started talking about, you know, short haul flights, and we always just, you know, I think when we talk about those, we just mean not the long one, right? We don't really care where it comes from or where it's going to. It's just, you know, after you cross an ocean, the rest of the flights after that is sort of how I think about it. And for the purposes of this award rule, it's going to be interesting, especially in Asia, because you basically, from the United States, can fly nonstop to one of three regions, Japan, North Asia, or South Asia, or Central Asia. I mean, technically, there's the India flights. But so if you fly, if you're trying, you know, your ultimate destination is Bangkok, if you connect in Seoul, in mainland China, or in Tokyo, you've now gone inter-region on that flight onward to Bangkok. If you connect in Hong Kong, it's intra-region. So you have to basically, if you want to go to Bangkok or anywhere else in Thailand or Laos or Cambodia or Singapore, you know, that whole chunk of the award read chart, you have to go via Hong Kong to be able to fly those, you know, quote unquote short haul flights in business class or in a premium cabin at the discounted rate or the lower rate. That makes sense the way I explained it?
Yeah, it does. It's
it's a complicated and weird thing, but, you know, I'm trying the best I can. I've written it down once, and I'll put a link to that so people can read it. But it's, the gist of it is, you know, if you're going to China or mainland China or Taiwan, don't go via Hong Kong, because that, you know, Hong Kong to Taipei is an inter-region flight. One's South Asia and one's North Asia.
So what about Beijing to Bangkok?
That would be between regions. That's North Asia to South Asia.
So it would price the higher, it should be higher price.
So if you fly that in business class on Beijing, Bangkok, you pay the partner rate, not the United rate. It'll be the higher price.
Interesting.
So it'll be US to South Asia still, but it'll be the higher award price.
Hmm.
And Japan screws everything up because Japan's its own region.
Well, for a while, we couldn't even get awards domestically in Japan, right? Wasn't that a thing?
Yeah, that's and you still can't search directly, I think, just for domestic awards. I think you have to search for them with a connection. Maybe they finally fixed that. But but I was looking today for examples and trying to sort of, you know, get screenshots of stuff. And every time I touched Japan, it blew, you know, broke all my queries. So now, you know, if you need a connection going to China because the United nonstops aren't available, straight into China, you've got to look at San Francisco, Seoul.
Really?
That, because if you're trying to get to China, that's still North Asia. So if you can fly San Francisco, Seoul, and then onward on Asiana, that's okay. That's still a United award.
So just back to what I was saying, though. I mean, are you sure that – so if I do Newark, Beijing, Beijing, Bangkok, that I
– partner rate.
So which would be – so what do you think – I mean, I don't know if you know what the charts are, but what do you think it is? Was it supposed to
– 80 in business.
That's the partner rate.
Yeah, I think it's 70 for the United rate. Hang on, I'm pulling it up real quick here while we're talking. I had these all open earlier, and it was crazy. So the United rate for mainland USA to South Asia is 70, and the partner rate is 80. So basically, if you can't get United across straight to Hong Kong, and you end up connecting anywhere else, it costs you an extra 10,000 points.
Right. Which, in that case, isn't that bad. But no, when you start...
It's not, but it still sucks.
Yeah. No, absolutely.
But like, yeah, there's the weird ones where, like, if you fly to Japan via Korea, it prices out at 75, because that's what the partner rate is, instead of 65, which is what the All United rate is. There's just a lot of little ones like that that add up over time.
Well, here's a very I have an example I just pulled up, and it's random. Newark, Beijing, Beijing, Bangkok is showing up as 80,000 in business. And then right below it, Newark, London, London, Bangkok is showing up as 70,000.
Okay, so that second one is a bug and shouldn't price that way.
but here it is. The London, Bangkok flight is in economy, which I don't. But that's, it's just a saver first sold out. It doesn't say that you're downgraded to economy.
Yeah, so but what that means is because you're in a lower class of service, you're now back on the United partner chart. Or excuse me, on the United chart, not the partner chart. Hmm. So, yeah, you can go within the region in the same cabin and between regions, apparently, in the lower cabin. So this is still ridiculously complicated.
Yes.
Yay. And, you know, there's still a bunch, you know, a lot of these awards are auto-priced and are filed in the computer systems, and, you know, the rates are specific, are in there, and there's, you know, sort of not much the agents can do, but there are still a whole bunch that are manually calculated, and I think we're going to see more and more of that. And quite frankly, I think, you know, these changes are more generous than what we thought they were going to be. They certainly gave us worst case scenario and then backed off a little bit.
Well, do you think it was a plan to have people dump their miles? I mean, because everywhere you look, people were just unloading. I've talked to people that said they have 3 miles in their account, 100 miles.
Yeah, I can't imagine why United would, right? I mean, I understand that having the miles on their books is a liability, but I can't believe that this was something that's going to change the way that the books really look. I just don't. I find that hard to believe. There can't have booked, you know, enough miles out of liability that, you know, we're talking – you think we're talking tens of millions of dollars worth of liability? I find that hard to believe.
Yeah.
Right? And if you're not hitting a $10 million point, then why would you care?
No, yeah, I guess.
So, I don't know.
No, you're probably right.
Not to mention that even if you're wiping that liability away, the real world costs are much higher under the old charts than the new charts, right? It costs them a lot more to buy those. Or the real world costs are the same either way, and the offset is much lower.
Yeah, so they're
only writing off 70,000 points instead of 80,000 for the same award, and the partner's still charging you God knows how much. So it's not particularly great. So I would be surprised if this was some sort of brilliant scheme. I think when in doubt, assume that major corporations are incompetent, not scheming, conniving, incredibly skilled, coordinated kind of people. So, but, you know, I'm a cynic. What can I say? anyway, enough about that. Buying miles. Do you buy miles, Roland?
On occasion.
On occasion. Do you ever buy American Airlines miles?
I didn't until a promotion came out.
What are the details on that promotion? Do you remember?
I do remember.
I don't.
Actually, I don't remember. I have it written down and I can't find it. Yeah.
You are.
So essentially the gist of it is it comes down to under 2 cents per mile because they're giving you a discount. It's up to 30% bonus miles. So if you buy 60,000 or more, you get 18,000 bonus miles. 40,000 to 59,000, you get 12,000 bonus miles. 30,000 to 39,000, 8,250 bonus miles. And between 20,000 and 29,000, it's 5,000 bonus miles.
Okay, so the sweet spot, it sounds like, is at the 60,000.
Yeah, at the 60,000 is where you get the most.
And that, yes. Yeah, so.
Because you top out anything higher, you only get 18,000. So.
Okay, so 560 gets you 78. And that costs you roughly.
$1,400 bucks?
That's not bad. Not bad at all.
No, and you can get, I mean, a one-way Cathay award pretty much to Asia, New York, Hong Kong, or something like that. It would cost you about 67,000, I believe, is the number.
The business or first?
First.
Sweet.
Yeah.
So nice.
So if you wanted 60, so I guess, yeah, if you buy 60, you have enough for a first class ticket.
Nice. All right. That's a deal. Alaska Airlines has a similar promo out right now. I think that, do you know when that American deal expires, by the way?
It's February 28th.
Okay. So Alaska's got one. I think it runs a little longer. It's a 40% bonus on buying miles. Same idea. Also good value for certain premium cabin award seats. And we'll put links to some blog posts that have those details, I suppose, in the show notes. Virgin Atlantic has de-hubbed Hong Kong.
Wow. They're
following in United's footsteps or something like that. By which I mean they're no longer going to connect onward from Hong Kong to Sydney.
So they canceled Hong Kong-Cleveland also?
Yeah, Hong Kong-Cleveland is also canceled. although, you know, the mayor of Cleveland said they spoke to something like 60 different airlines about possibly adding service. So maybe London-Cleveland will come.
Okay.
You know, United tried it with a 752 for a couple summers and may have made a dollar or two here and there. So, you know, Virgin bringing in. Although, actually, I was being kind of a jerk about it, but with their partnership with Delta, they actually could run a Delta 752 on that route if they wanted.
Oh, yeah.
That'd be awkward. Don't bet on that either. But, yeah, they're cutting their Sydney route as of this May. Which, you know, they showed up there about 10 years ago and made a big deal. And even relatively recently, we're talking about possibly adding Melbourne or another destination in Australia. And now they've just completely shut it down.
Now, are they still flying to Hong Kong or they're just?
They are still going to fly to Hong Kong.
So could they essentially connect to Virgin Australia or V Australia or whatever the heck it's called?
Maybe. That is one of the things being talked about is will the Australia now start running their own metal up there and, you know, how does that work? Obviously, there's some weird stuff about who owns which and are they really partners or not and all that stuff, which makes it a little harder. But that was one thing being talked about. As of right now, that hasn't been announced, but there are some people suggesting it might happen. I don't know. There's Cathay is apparently, I think I saw in one of the stories, maybe upping service to 380 on the route.
Cathay?
Which they don't have 380s, do they?
Yeah, they don't. Unless they're getting some. But, I mean, they have the 77Ws, I've done the Hong Kong Sydney on Cathay, and it was a 330.
Sorry, it's Qantas is updating.
Qantas, okay, yeah.
Sorry, I had it in something like. But Cathay has 4 flights a day. Qantas only has the 1 daily, but they're running a 380 on it right now. So, and they, right, Qantas cut a bunch of service on the route also when they moved to Dubai.
Yeah, I was going to say a lot of those Asia to Europe to, you know, those kangaroo routes that were run are being cut. It's Dubai now for Qantas, and yeah, those Bangkok flights are gone.
Yeah. And even, I mean, I guess even before the, Qantas moved over to Dubai, they were doing a lot in Singapore more than even than Hong Kong.
Yeah.
Does
British serve Sydney or no?
Yeah, they run their own flights through, I think, Hong Kong.
Okay.
So possibly, maybe not. I know they still serve on their own metal. They had to, because they used to actually only do it on Qantas metal. And now they have added, they had, because Qantas dumped them, they had to add back their own.
Oh, yeah. That's right.
So, yeah, that was a little awkward. But anyways, it's interesting to see, you know, this is another arguably premier route, right, that as a carrier has been fighting on and along, fighting with on a long, for a long time and has basically given up on.
Right.
So, yeah, British Airways does go through. They've got connecting flights via Singapore.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
All right, what's next on the schedule here? Hawaiian Airlines. Aloha. They announced Extra Comfort. So I think we're now running out of different abbreviations and ways to describe what we would call extra legroom seats. and maybe the last one left. It confuses me because it's the same as Delta's abbreviation. They're both EC.
Okay. Main cabin extra is still the funniest one, I think.
Oh, please. Yeah, it's pretty bad. So anyway, Extra Comfort, they finally announced pricing for all of their service. They're only putting it on their A330s, which serve a dozen or so different routes in total. And what's interesting to me about it is there's two prices. They're fixed prices. It's $100 for long flights and $60 for short flights. And so long is basically anything from Honolulu International except Tahiti and anything Honolulu to JFK.
Okay.
And all of Tahiti is considered short and West Coast is considered short. And it's $100 or it's $60.
Which is good. I mean, straightforward.
It's real easy. You know what it is to get in there, right? It's not like... Arguably, they're leaving something on the table by not dynamically pricing it, right? United says they're making more money by dynamically pricing Economy Plus. I think JetBlue's been dynamically pricing even their even more product. So, you know, people are saying they're getting, you know, they might be leaving money on the table, but at the same time, it's easy for the customer. The other thing about it that I found interesting is it's 5 extra inches of legroom, so it's 36-inch pitch, which more or less matches anyone else doing long-haul extra legroom seating. And it's it includes... access to the video on demand system, which is paid normally for Hawaiian customers. It includes extra meals and snacks, which typically you get some meals, but not all free. There's like, you get a snack always, but not necessarily a meal on the long haul flights. It's weird. Includes a pillow and a blanket, and it includes power outlets at the seat.
The pillows are on the international, I think, right? The pillow and blanket?
Or the original, see, they changed things a little bit between the original announcement and the more recent version. At one point it was upgraded meals on the international, and a souvenir pillow and blanket international, but just a regular pillow and blanket on the regular flights. I don't know how it's actually going to play out. I think now it's meals on all flights and maybe souvenir pillows only on some flights or something like that. Their website has the new rules on it and it seems like it makes sense, but I don't really know. So, but I guess my question is, and sort of my thought on this is, I mean, sure, it's only a dozen or so routes, but it seems to me like, you know, for the price you're paying and what you're getting, this might be relatively speaking, oh, and priority boarding. This might be sort of the best value version of this product we've seen in a long haul market. Is that being too kind to them?
No, I think that they, first of all, it's simple. And, you know, the five inches of more room, that's pretty good. I think it's, especially for those routes,
yeah.
You know, it adds value. But the only thing that, for me, I would say, well, am I going to take them? Where am I going to credit the points to?
Oh, yeah. No, I'm not suggesting it makes them worth, you know, becoming my favorite airline or anything. But
no, but if somebody's just looking for value and, you know, it might be one, they take one vacation a year.
Yeah.
Especially if you're going to Australia, you might be able to get, I don't know, how are the connection times if you did JFK?
I think Australia requires an overnight.
Oh, okay.
In Honolulu, which, you know, isn't the worst thing in the world. But yeah,
exactly.
I've had worse places to sleep. Not necessarily cheap, but also not horrible. No, the connections aren't always great. Some do require an overnight, some just move through. But part of me also says if you're only flying once a year anyways, ignore the points, get the flight that prices right, and move on.
Right.
So And I keep telling people that and they think I'm crazy. But
well, because you keep telling people that collect points that.
Sure, but not, anyways, not everybody who collects the points does it right. anyway, I actually think, like I was saying before, though, I think this is probably one of the better premium coach product, or it's stuck with all these words. It's not a premium economy product because it's not actually premium economy. It's one of the better seats with more space for your feet products out there. They provide a couple extra nice value adds that make it a little compelling, especially on a 10-hour flight. I did,
yeah.
You know, when I did the inaugural JFK Honolulu, I paid a lot less than that and said it was way too cheap. And 2 days later, they raised the price for a bulkhead seat. But, you know, you're basically talking $10 an hour.
I think right.
That's a very reasonable price for that little extra bit of comfort.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, see, what do I got next on the list here? Because we're running out of time almost. Accor Hotels, which mostly gets made famous by the fact that if you have the right credit card or pretend you have the right credit card, you can get platinum status with them for free every year or two, is celebrating their fifth anniversary as the rebranded Accor Club Loyalty Program. And as part of that is offering up a 5x points earning, Le Club Accor Hotels. I did not mean to diminish the name there. kind of do, actually. It's a horrible name. Le Club Accor Hotels is celebrating its fifth anniversary, and they're offering up 5x points for your next stay for everybody. And it's you have to register and book by February 18th, so in the next 2 weeks or so. But the stay can happen any point throughout the year. And you get 5x points. Now, problem is the points only last a year. Earning them isn't at a particularly good rate, except for with a bonus like this. And the redemption rates kind of suck, especially if you're in the United States. For our European listeners, a lot more options.
You said the Hotel Formula One.
Okay.
The Hotel Formula One, which I've never heard of.
Formula One hotels are part of it. Yep. Novotel, Mercure, Ibis, Sofitel. Actually, the M Gallery hotels are pretty nice.
Pullman, too. I think Pullman hotels.
Yeah, Pullman is also part of the group. Yeah. So, actually, looking at their webpage, I don't see Formula One listed here anymore. I wonder what's up with that.
It's at the bottom. It's Formula One.
I'm sorry. I was looking at this promo. I still don't see them listed on my version of the page. But anyway, I'm sure they're still there. And how would you get rid of a hotel chain name like that? anyway, so they're going to be part of the group. But it seems like a nice bonus. A nice little promo they got going. So, and last but not least, if you liked transferring your Virgin Atlantic points that you earned flying to Sydney to Hilton Honors, it's now going to be a lot worse. They devalued that transfer as of, by the time you hear this, I suppose yesterday. That ended this week. And Wyndham changed their transfer to hotels this week also and did it with no advance warning and screwed a whole bunch of people. So, friendly reminder not to try to hoard points and think that they'll be worth something more later elsewhere.
Well, you know, since you mentioned Hilton, didn't they introduce a new internet tiered program or something like that where your free
Your free Wi-Fi is the cheap one versus, and you can pay up for better service if you want it.
Right.
Yeah. They're introducing that at a bunch of their hotels. So without knowing how bad the free one is, I'm kind of okay with that. Honestly, having experienced free hotel internet that was horribly slow anyways, I'm not entirely sure there's much of a difference.
Yeah. So if we had Steven on, he would make a comment about his internet.
Yeah. Well, we've tried to record with him over Skype before when he's at the hotel up here in New York, and it's been awful. So,
yeah.
Anyway, fun times. We've now rambled entirely too long and haven't had Steven to cut us off. So congratulations on what I believe may be the longest points order episode ever. but I'm now going to cut us off because the clock is starting to roll over on me here.
Yes.
Where can they find you?
They can find me on Twitter at MundoSurfer, and I'm on Tumblr at mundosurfer.tumblr.com.
Awesome. I am Seth, also the Wandering Airman at wan.me and all sorts of other places that are misspelled if you try to find me elsewhere. you can follow the Points Hoarder podcast at Points Hoarder on Twitter. You can also follow us on our Facebook page, which strangely enough is also Facebook/Points Hoarder. And you can visit us at pointshoarder.com. We're on iTunes. We're like everywhere, man. It's crazy. leave a comment. Let us know what you think. Let us know if you got thoughts for things to talk about in the next episodes. Love hearing from you. Anyway, that's it. Later.
Take care.
Thanks for joining us for the Points Hoarder podcast, where stockpiling points is serious fun.